Hello, and welcome to the podcast, Appreciating Real Estate. The podcast is a production of the Center for Real Estate at The Ohio State University. I'm Mary Beth McCormick. My guest today is Gloria Gill. Gloria has just recently retired as a Senior Managing Director for Real Estate from the UC Regents. Gloria, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about this, and giving back is really what my goal is right now at my age and at this time of my life. So thank you for having me.
I'm just delighted you could join us. So Gloria, you've got a really interesting life story. Can we talk a little bit about, how you began and where you got to, how you got to where you are now, what you've done for the past decade or so?
Of course. I'd love to. I got a shout out to my mom, who is my hero. I think that she raised four kids all by herself in the Philippines as a seamstress. So came to America with only $100 in her pocket, typical immigrant story. Wow. And started, living in a basement of a Filipino family. And there's a sewing machine. She's a seamstress. And within a week, she had all the nurses in the Filipino nurses giving her clothes to sew. So she wrote right away on her first week, "I can send you money right away. I'm in business in the basement." So that's my inspiration from all these things that are happening to me. I think it's from the background of being raised by a strong woman, my mom. She passed away 4 years ago, but, the values are still here with me. How I started, came to America, was petitioned by my parents. My mom remarried, and he's an Englishman who adopted all four of us. We were so blessed to have him, Dad Browning. And they said they can't afford to put me through college, that I had to work. So I was 18 years old and went to Aetna Life in their accounts receivable. I've always loved numbers. I gave up a college scholarship in the Philippines in majoring in electrical engineering and always loved numbers. So accounting may be a good switch, and work in their accounts receivable for real estate companies on their insurance for their properties. That's how I kind of segue to real estate. Never really planned this. And then one of the companies poached me from Aetna and worked for a Draper and Kramer, which is a real estate property management company, brokerage firm in Chicago, and became their controller. And pretty soon they moved me to property management. And before you know it, I was a portfolio manager for different property managers managing buildings, and then moved to LA. Once I moved to LA, I worked for TCW Realty Advisors as an asset manager, and of all places, managing the CalSTRS portfolio. And the rest is history from there. The CalSTRS person investment officer moved to LA County and said, "Gloria, I like what you did at TCW. We're opening up a new position, acquisitions, growing our separate account. Would you like to apply for the position?" And luckily I was accepted and worked there for 10 years, built the portfolio from $1 billion to $3 billion. And I said, after 10 years, enough of public service. But then UC called and said, "Gloria, how would you like to do it all over again? We have no real estate, and you would be able to invest $4 billion for us." I was so scared, asked my mom, and my mom says, "How do you eat a big elephant? One bite at a time. So focus on one deal at a time. Don't think about the $4 billion." And I was there 14 years and built a $5.5 billion portfolio. The rest is history. That's the short story. Sorry, I rambled.
Wow. No, that's terrific. So you've been in institutional investing for 25 years.
Correct.
Yeah. And how old were you when you came over from the Philippines?
I just turned 18. The petition, I had to come to America before I turned 18. So my petition was approved. I was 17 years old. Yeah.
And who did you live with in the Philippines while your mom was over here?
My grandpa. My mom was made sure that we were all taken care of. So my grandpa and my aunt, we all lived in one campus, kind of one little, area where both lived. There's two houses together. So I lived with our cousins and grandparents and aunt.
And it seems like one thing you got from your mom and your grandparents was a really strong work ethic.
Definitely. She worked from our living room with two employees sewing dresses. You show her an outfit, she measures you, she makes her own pattern, and you have a dress in 2 hours. Wow. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
Wow.
And one time, this is always, I remember this, she said, because we were, I was alone with just my mom. And she said, we don't have any more money. We got to go to my rich friends. Come on, let's go tonight. And we went to your girlfriend, who has like five maids. And they said, take out all your fabric. You know, Lydia is here. And we went home with like a whole slew of fabric in one huge bags. And she said to me, now we have enough food and rent for 1 month. And tuition. She sent us to private school, even though she couldn't afford it, because she thought the best gift she could give us was the values and best education. So went to Catholic school.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And so at UC Regents, it seems, and also a bit of CalSTRS, massive funds, large funds, but you were in kind of a startup role.
Correct. So, always a startup. Yeah. And
yeah.
I think at La Serra, there was already some process already set up. Mm-hmm. And so going to UC Regents, I just kind of continued on what I started at La Serra. And it was an easy transition, and also hired a partner that I've had there, and she's been with me 24 years as well.
So that actually sounds like a lot of fun to have capital to put out and be able to create something new at the same time, a mix of entrepreneurial and institutional at the same time.
Correct. I made our own business plan, strategic plan, presented it to the board, and the CIO was so good. She says, before you present to the board, go to the chairman and see, show him what you wanted to do. And he was so supportive, and we were in business day one. Oh,
terrific. So what would you say is your superpower? What traits do you have that have helped you be successful in life?
I think that the work ethic, most of all, is work harder than everybody else. Deliver 150%. If what's required is this is X, you have X plus Y, always have something extra. And also be patient. And I always think that if you add to the bottom line in a good way, when you're not sacrificing quality and treating people with respect, that they can't help but deny you. They can't deny you the promotions and the recognition because you're contributing to the firm. Mm-hmm. So always think of how you could contribute to the firm, and that has been my mantra forever.
You must have run into obstacles along the way. I think we all do. Everybody does.
Of course.
Yeah.
I never let it kind of dissuade me. Obstacles are there to help you grow better, I think, to challenge you. One example was at LA County, the position of head of real estate was available, and I knew that my weakness was public speaking, and I was always afraid to talk to the board, and I went to the CIO and I said, my weakness is X, and we need to hire a professional coach for me to get better, and I hope you will pay for it. And I said, I want to apply for the head of real estate position because my boss left. Mm-hmm. And he did. And I got better and better. And now I can speak in front of 800 people and not be afraid anymore. So that was a life-changing moment for me.
And that was very wise. I've seen you speak in front of 800 people.
Thank you.
You're great at it.
Oh, but believe me, at one time I would be like panicked. I couldn't speak. I couldn't sleep all night. But now I'm pretty comfortable. So thank God I overcome that fear. There's one more fear, but I'll work on that.
Okay. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, sure. A fear of deep water. I'm going to overcome that one day.
Okay.
I can swim, but I need to touch the bottom. So that's another fear. You can cut that out.
So you've just retired. You just stepped down very, very recently, like in the past month or so. So an interesting time to be involved in real estate. Was it hard for you to step away and let go?
It was very difficult. I felt like I built a, it's your baby. You built a portfolio, $5.5 billion portfolio, that you knew every item in that portfolio. Mm-hmm. And to let go was very tough. But there comes a time when other priorities come up. The brush fires triggered it. I was packing my I've been commuting to SoCal for the last 10 years because my husband lived there. And my son also lives there. So I've been commuting every weekend and work in NorCal. And the brush fires triggered it. So I think that at a certain point in time, you say priorities are family is really what you should be with, who you should be with at this time of pandemic and all these other natural disasters going around. And I'm not sorry. I really am. I'm very happy right now. So yeah, it was very tough.
So I'm sorry, I'm from Ohio. So NorCal, is that like Sacramento or the Bay Area?
Bay Area, San Francisco. Yeah, Oakland, and, where I live.
And then SoCal would be Los Angeles.
LA.
Yeah, Yeah. So that's, it's not a bad flight, but it's not a terribly easy drive.
Exactly. 6 hours to drive.
Yeah.
And we don't want to fly. So.
No. So what's your take on the real estate market right now? Clearly at $5.5 billion, you see everything. You've had exposure to every type of property, I imagine.
Yes.
And domestic and international.
Right.
Really, I keep saying really interesting times because it's the most polite way to phrase it, I guess.
It's very volatile. I don't think that we will be probably 5 steps forward, 7 steps backward, like we're seeing here, opening and closing. So really, I think I believe in the resiliency of the American people. I really believe that we will reinvent ourselves. And, you know, we came into this with full employment and low interest rates. So it's very different from other cycles. And I believe it would be a slow start, but I think it would be, you know, maybe a elongated V, not a U. So I'm being optimistic. It's just the optimistic side of me that I look at China and they opened up and they're slowly operating. So I really believe that. But there's some trends we're seeing. A lot of people want to get out of CBD areas right now, afraid of the infection. So when the vaccine comes, hopefully they'll come back. But housing and apartments in suburbs are pretty popular right now. Suburban office is popular right now because people don't want to take public transportation. They don't want to be infected. And yet, you know, we have one of our friend takes the train and she said it's empty. So you've got to be brave to really do that. But eventually, as people are required to go back to work, I don't think if they want to take a half full train, I don't think I want to do that. So there's there's changes in the way we will live, play, and work. I really think that there will be bigger changes in the way we'll live more than the work, because right now we've adjusted to working from home. So that would be a slow transition moving back to the office. But the way we live in apartments or homes, single family homes in suburbs where people are more spaced out, even in schools, I think that that's how it's going to change dramatically.
So let's talk about the winners and the losers then. It sounds like you're thinking winners are suburban office, suburban housing.
Correct. And grocery anchored retail. I mean, Target is so smart to have food in their department store. If they didn't have food, they would be shut down, right? And their sales have plummeted, you know, just up in the air with grocery sales. So I always say this to people thinking out of the box, that Target should be leasing out their spaces to other, you know, little curated shops, like, you know, I don't know, little clothing stores, and then they'll be in business because they're open. They were really hurt when they were shut down.
Who are the other winners?
Data centers have been winners, and manufactured homes have been winners.
Yeah.
Storage, of course, industrial is the flavor of the month, and life science, because of COVID research on drugs and vaccines and pharma. I think that would be the future for America.
Okay.
Lots of jobs are being created as we speak, and everybody I speak, you know, I tried to keep in touch with our other LPs. They all want medical or life science, medical office buildings.
Okay. That makes sense. And without naming any specific properties, what are you most worried about? You know, that maybe were in your portfolio. What are you most worried about right now?
Of course, hotels. Our hotel properties are still shut down in some manner. And that would be a slow recovery. Although we have a hotel manager who's saying that their winter, you know, resorts are fully booked. People are working from home instead of working from home. They're booking their hotel resorts and bringing their family. So at least there's a change of scenery. So I'm hopeful that that will happen with just being careful on distancing with other people in the hotel. Student housing would also be challenged with online courses. Now, you know, classrooms are, you probably know how Ohio State will do it, but that is a big concern. We never thought that student housing would be affected, but it is. Yeah. And most of all, senior housing. My mom passed away 4 years ago. I would be so sad if I couldn't visit her for a week or two. And I'm sure she would be so depressed as well. So senior housing, and it's a hot spot for COVID, will be challenged as well. No new rooms are being leased up, and there'll be some departures from death. So it's pretty gruesome. Yeah, grim for senior housing.
What's it going to take for senior housing to come back?
I think that if people will just be, well, first of all, no visitors allowed. That's tough for our elderly. Can you imagine not seeing your mom? So some way of letting them be connected to their loved ones, you know, outside the facility. And that's what my friend is doing. She's visiting her mom in the garden, you know. So that's, I think there should be some kind of outside facility where they could visit their loved ones, don't have to go inside the units. And really more safe distancing for the communal, you know, dining room and activities might be stopped for a while. So that they have to reinvent themselves on how they take care of our elderly and be more, I think, in their own room, supply all the activities or have some type of activity for them while staying in their own room and have them energized. They are doing some changes as far as, you know, sanitation and cleaning, but that won't make people comfortable to bring their loved ones. So they have to do major changes in the operations.
And of course, there's a spectrum for senior housing, everything from independent living to assisted to, you know, to SNF to, you know, skilled nursing facilities. Do you see, you know, for 20 years, I've heard the story that demographics argue for, you know, in more independent housing and, you know, more people moving to senior housing, out of their homes to senior housing. It seems that people never want to do it as soon as investors expect them to do it.
That's correct.
You know, because, you know, we think, you know, my dad's 87 and he's a very young 87 and he has no intention, you know, of even moving to an independent facility right now. So do you think that there'll be more of a bifurcation that
Definitely. I think that people now will just stay at home. And so then you have to reinvent yourself and bring the services to the homes of the elderly. And I think that that would be a boom, you know, a business that could grow.
Okay. Yeah.
Bring it to them.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Physical therapy, sports, you know, all the exercise, the gym, fitness trainers, massages, whatever they need, you go to their homes and then you're not as exposed to the rest.
So you talked about an elongated V. And one of the things I love about you is you are always so optimistic.
Sometimes to a fault.
Yeah. So what does that mean? How long will that take, do you think, for us to get out of this?
I think 2 years, 21, 22, end of 22, maybe we'll be getting there. Hopefully a vaccine in 2021, and slowly people will start opening up and not, you know, and I see 2023 would be hopefully almost 50%, 75% back to normal. But yeah, I look at China and I have friends in Hong Kong and they're living. They're, in fact, my son's fiance, her parents work in Beijing and they're here in the US. And she says, I want to go back to Beijing because they're out there now going out. And here she's tied into, you know, to their homes. They can't get out. So I think a year or two, that's my best guess.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. you know, when you and I first started talking about this 6 months ago, maybe more, you know, I think we were talking next year, maybe, or the end of this year, but it's
not going to happen.
Not going to happen. No.
There's really stubborn people who don't follow the rules. And so we have to go back again and shut down the, you know, the economy, which is sad. Yeah.
What are you seeing in California?
California, anecdotally, a friend tried to sell her home in a suburb, listed it on Saturday, had 10 showings on Sunday, 5 showings on Monday, looked at offers on Tuesday, and accepted an offer above asking on Wednesday. That's anecdotally, but I think that's happening. Same thing, I think, in New Jersey from New York. Mm-hmm. And so it's really happening. The trend of going out to the suburbs out of CBDs is real.
So does that mean that housing prices in San Francisco are moderating? Or
yes,
are they going
essentially,
down?
Essentially, some are 1,000 a foot. They're now down to 800. And so still waiting to go down to probably 600, and people will be buying them. Then they'll come back. Affordability is always an issue. And of course, suburban housing are more affordable than San Francisco housing.
Right, right.
Definitely.
Okay. Are you seeing anything else with properties overseas that American investors or landlords could learn from, having gone through all this?
I'm just hearing that Europe is on fire, that there's more transactions happening right now. So because before, in the beginning, the debt market was shut down. So now it opened up and equity market is slowly opening up. So I think that transactions will be coming in the market. That's what I'm hearing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of dry powder from all these large funds. And,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Invest, right.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So what my thinking is that yes, rents will go down, but cap rates will stay the same or not go high as much. And mm-hmm. so the bidding process is still there and you might get a 10% discount. I don't see we'll see 50% discount yet. I haven't heard of it.
Except do you think
for
we will?
Assets that are really, really over-levered. But for, you know, with good credit, stabilized assets, 10% discount, 10 to 15% discount is what we're seeing. 12 offers. How good is that? That's a good market.
Yeah, this 30 is
30 offers. Now it's 12. That's still pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So which markets? Which market is that?
Well, Europe, I think, slowly going back to Asia. I hear China is slowly recovering. Mm-hmm. Hong Kong is challenged because of the protests and everything. But Singapore, I think, will be the new Hong Kong. So that's mm-hmm. where probably opportunities will pop up. And it's pretty safe country and, you know, very transparent. So I think Singapore is still expensive, but, you know, moderating. For Europe, I think the UK will be challenged, but people are circling. People are looking at it. And same with Germany, France, Paris. And for the US, I think the coastal markets are percolating. You know, deals are popping up. I talked to our brokerage firms and they said they're getting busier.
Okay.
So deals will be coming out in the market soon. And, you know, that's why they get 12 bids, because there's not too many deals out there. So people put out the money.
Right.
A lot of money chasing few deals.
Well, and when we talk about a lot of money, do you have a sense for how much it really is? I mean, I know it's billions and billions that the private equity funds have raised.
No idea. I just know that I have offshore money courting me and saying, would you invest it for us, Gloria? And I said, I'm not ready to do anything yet, you know, but... Mm-hmm. Let's just wait till later in the year. You know,
mm-hmm.
Those are the things that are percolating. I couldn't believe it that, you know, offshore money is looking at coming to the U.S. They said, we think that the U.S. is still the best risk-adjusted return when this pandemic, you know, recovers mm-hmm. with a discount and the I think the consumerism that we have. We still shop, maybe different types of shopping, no more clothes, but we're still more on entertainment and travel and tour. We spend. And grocery, you know, we still, our housing requirements are still there, even though maybe like your dad, you know, will probably just stay home instead of moving to senior housing, mm-hmm. but he still has to live. He still has to shop. He still has to, you know, medicine and drugs and everything. The needs that we want are still there and the population is there. I am concerned about the inequality, and we've talked about this, of the haves and the have-nots. So that's mm-hmm. something I think that we could help do some way, in some manner, if you and I can work on something that we could help the, you know, the blighted areas, the poor areas, to have kind of the inequality is just bigger and bigger. And I think that that's a symptom that we should try to help in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And thank you. You shared a reading list for my students that I'm very grateful to you for, some really great books on that. Evicted. Yes. Yeah, some really great books. So I know it's something that you think about a lot. And I know that, you know, at this point in your life, you're looking to give back, you know, right, as am I a bit. So I'm really excited to see what your next steps are.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you on the inequality, I give you a deal that we did at La Serra, LA County, that this was a 6 city blocks in New York. And it was where Barbara Streisand grew up, and the board was kind of hesitant to approve it. It was a bad area with drugs, alcohol, everything, prostitution, chop shop, everything. And my site inspection was an NYPD blue working part-time as security and saying Gloria across the street. That's how bad it was. But because I grew up in the south side of Chicago, I believed of, you know, gentrifying, but not really kicking out the tenants who are there, the people who live there, but really making their life better. And we did. We locked. That's where I learned locks to put in that they use in prisons that could not be picked. The lamps, you know, on the front door cannot be, you know, with bulletproof, and the kids are playing in the playground with NYPD blue watching them. And we turned it around, and it was such a fulfilling project that it even made 13% return, I believe. And at the end of the day, the board said, whenever they go to New York, they said, can we tour the property? It became their poster child. And eventually New York said, why is LA County doing this? Why isn't New York doing this? And so eventually New York pension funds also started doing that. So I hope to do that more in LA and maybe in San Francisco area, in California, and sponsor and help people realize that, you know, you make the immigrants' life better and safer, and they will take care of the properties. They started cleaning, putting plants on their front door and just, you know, drapes on the hallway window, all on their own, because they were so happy that it's now not a slum landlord, but a landlord who cares about them, and the heating and, you know, the air conditioning worked and everything, and they felt safer. So that's something that I will remember that I did. You know, I will take that as my track record and hopefully do more of that in the future.
Yeah, that's a great legacy. That's great. And, you know, my students are always asking me, you know, how can we do good, you know, and make a living? And I say, you know, it's entirely possible in real estate to do good and do well. And so that's one example. What advice would you have for my students today in these interesting times?
I always say be patient. Humility is always a virtue that will reward you well. And I always say this to our UC Irvine kids when I guest lecture, don't burn bridges. The toes you step on today is connected to the ass you're going to kiss later on. So the world is a circle. I was a lowly asset manager at TCW. No one was talking to me then. And suddenly you become an investor and everybody thinks you had the best jokes, but don't let it go to your head.
Right.
And those people who treated me well, I want to invest with them because those are the values that I respect and you know, dear to my heart. And I think I told you about the book, Four Agreements. It's very hard to do, but it's an easy read for the kids. Mm-hmm. If they could follow that, that would be excellent. And I also say that, you know, when you have dreams, nothing is impossible. Look at me from a little girl from Manila. I didn't know I would end up like this and in this position. And I'm very grateful to America for giving me this chance. And so I want to give back. And so write your goals, and you might be kind of, there'll be hurdles on the way, but keep focused, you know, do whatever. Jobs may be different from what your goal is, but do it with grace and do your best. Always do your best and learn from those trips and bring that to the new jobs. And eventually you'll be stronger and better.
Gloria, this is why I just always love chatting with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time today.
I really enjoyed it and hope it helped. And happy to mentor kids. If they want to call me, you know, just let me know. Happy to give them some advice.
I'm sure we will take you up on that. Thank you.
Good. I'm here. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.